Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson.
In this episode, we discuss practical ideas to help you develop as a coach and build your team's culture. Now, we want to get you out of here in 30 minutes or less, so let's get started.
You're listening to episode 74, For Better or Worse, a discussion on our sideline behavior.
Welcome back this week, JP, to another episode of Coaching Culture. This week, we are going to get into a discussion of sideline behavior. If you've watched Hollywood films on any sport, or you look at what is trending on Twitter or on YouTube, or what people are sharing when it comes to coaching antics on the sideline, most of the time, it's the lunatics that get a lot of the likes, right, and the clicks and the shares. And that isn't necessarily always indicative of what are best practices for coaches on the sideline. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what is the best way to be an effective coach in pregame, during the game, after the game, in timeouts, and interacting with officials and players. How can you be more effective to make your teams better in those moments rather than letting the rage monster control you? Now, JP, I know a little bit of your story, and you were at one time in your career very familiar with the rage monster. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey and your sideline behavior as it's evolved over the years?
Yeah, Nate, so this is an area of my coaching that I'm probably most proud of as far as my growth and kind of my own personal transformation. And it was definitely most noticeable by my players and their parents and the fans. But there was this time kind of early on that my wife and I were actually watching a basketball game together. Right? And it was kind of rare that we would actually go to a basketball game and sit in the stands and watch together. But we were watching one of our youth coaches in the program. And I remember here's this coach. He's a good coach. He's enthusiastic. He's really, really passionate. But he's the most enthusiastic and passionate person on that bench. Right? He just never stops talking, and he's really yelling the entire time. And I kind of turned to my wife because I could see that it really wasn't connecting with the players. But also it was really kind of annoying to sit back behind the bench and constantly hear him going on and on and on. And so I started to put myself in the player's shoes, right? And just like, man, that must get really tiring after a while. So I said to my wife, said, gosh, she's really annoying. And she just kind of turns to me and is like, really? Like, because that's kind of how you coach. And that was kind of like a hard feedback to hear. But it really like hit me, like, and I was like, boy, I probably need to start reflecting more on my sideline behavior. And it was coming from a person that I respected and loved, and I appreciated her feedback, because honestly, I had gotten that type of feedback before on my sideline behavior during games plenty of times through the previous 10 years of coaching. But it was this moment for some reason that it kind of, and just seeing that and being able to, it really kind of resonated with me. And so it was at that moment that I said, man, I really got to start making a change in the way I coach the sideline. But that change wasn't just like tomorrow. Like, it took a while for that process or for that change to happen.
Well, I think anytime you're going to change an aspect of your coaching, self-awareness is often the first step. And it's funny how blind we can be sometimes to our behaviors that may be, in fact, detrimental to the way our players are performing or interacting with one another. And sometimes we can hear that feedback and we're not ready to receive it. And I think that's one of the first steps here for coaches when they're just considering the effect of their sideline behavior, is really to understand what are your tendencies on the sidelines in terms of when things are going well, when things are not going well, when players are making mistakes, when players need to be corrected, when you're bringing players in a game or out of a game, just to understand your own tendencies in terms of how you react in those situations is probably the first step before you can even start to bring a positive change.
Yeah, and so it reminds me of episode 5 of Coaching Culture, right? Well over a year ago, when Mike Nabors, the women's basketball coach of Arkansas, came on and he talked about his moment, right? When he realized that as much as he claimed to be about the process and be a process coach, that he realized he was a results coach because he would react to this, whatever happened on the scoreboard, you know, and you could almost just tell how things were going for their team on the scoreboard just by watching him. And so he realized, and that was kind of a moment for him as far as self-awareness. And I always loved that story. So for me, shortly after my wife had given me that feedback, and I think it had been building up for some time, that I was starting to realize that I needed to make some changes in my sideline behavior during games, I mic'd myself up, you know, and I also filmed myself. And I tried to go back and listen to myself during an entire game. I tried to watch myself during an entire game, but I couldn't even get through the entire game. And it was for two reasons. One was because I just started to realize, wow, this must be really hard to play for. Like, I can't even imagine having to go through this an entire season of 30 games of listening or watching this guy. And then the other thing was, I realized that I wasn't modeling what I valued, or at least what I claimed to value. Like, I talked about mental toughness. I talked about controlling the controllables and, you know, focusing on what was at hand there. But I was caught up in the referees. I was caught up in the emotions of the moment. You know, it was just like Mike Neighbors said, I was very much that results coach. If the things were going well for us, I was positive, enthusiastic. When things didn't go well for us, I was starting to get a little bit more negative in that. And so I just really, just by watching myself, that helped me to realize that I wasn't really modeling what I claimed to value in my coaching behavior on the sidelines.
Well, JP, I think you hit on a really important point there. You know, part of being aware of your behavior on the sideline is really understanding how it affects your team and how it affects your players. I mean, it's one thing for us, I think every coach probably feels how their team plays. Like, there's a feeling when you're not playing well that becomes an emotional experience for coaches. And in the same way, exactly like you said, when you're playing great, it feels great. It's so much easier to be positive and keep pumping your kids up. And it's certainly true for your kids as well. But I think one of the things that's been helpful for me over the years is trying to understand the words and the behaviors of mine on the sideline and in timeouts and in pregame and postgame and how they affect our team. Are my words making us better? Are they making us worse? Am I an obstacle, or am I helping to enhance and give my players a better chance to perform? And one of the things that I realized is that I definitely don't want to get in the way of their performance. So one thing that I've kind of committed myself to quite a while back is I'll never introduce tension or add the tension in a timeout. So for example, in basketball, you know, you give up an 8-0 run or a 10-2 run and you call timeout, and the other team's over there, they're celebrating and they're going bonkers and slapping each other on the bobo, and you know, your guys are coming back to the timeout and they're frustrated and they're discouraged, and you know, I feel how poorly we've played, and maybe my natural inclination is to try to vent a little bit, you know, and verbalize that and get after them a little bit and ride their mistakes, you know, what they were doing wrong to give up that run. But none of those things I found were really beneficial to get us to the next play, which is we need to calm down, we need to relax, we need to find our confidence, and we need to go get a great shot coming out of the timeout. So I just made this commitment because I felt like, and I didn't get this necessarily from specific players, but what I was doing was being ineffective because I was adding to sort of this mental barrier that they were already bringing into their performance that was keeping them from being better. So I never add tension. Like, I won't add tension at halftime. I don't do it in timeouts. And maybe that's not for everybody, but I've just felt like that's been really ineffective in my past when I would become an obstacle for our players to move past their mistakes.
Yeah, and so one of the things I did was I just went and asked some of my players how it felt to be coached by me during the games. Like, what are you hearing? What are you actually tuning out? And they started to give me some really strong feedback too on my coaching, Nate, where a lot of the stuff that I was saying, I was just saying because that's what coaches are supposed to say, like what we see on the TV, that's what we've experienced, that's what we think we're supposed to say. But players were just tuning me out. And so that was a big moment for me, is like, all right, this is not effective for me if they're tuning me out. So I started to realize that in my own coaching. I think here's the big challenge for us as coaches, is to really not just decipher between what's ineffective and effective. Because for instance, me being really energetic and giving, you know, getting angry during a timeout or at halftime, that can actually produce the desired effect that I want in that moment. For instance, if my team's not playing hard and I use anger to motivate them, well, I am now getting an effect. They are now playing hard. But I think we got to come back to what we really value when we're trying to evaluate our communication. And so I don't think there's just ineffective and effective, but I think there's beneficial. And I like to use beneficial as it's not just producing the desired effect in that moment, but it's overall benefiting the person, right? The culture. And what it comes back to what we value, right? And we want an intrinsically motivated culture. We want a culture where players are leading, not just the coaches leading. I don't want to be the number one cheerleader on that sideline, right? Well, what does that say about my team culture if, as the coach, I'm the loudest person, right? Honestly, I should be more focused on making tactical and technical adjustments as a coach, and the players probably should be filling in that role of cheerleader more. And so if I'm constantly being the encourager, am I constantly having to be the loud, even really positive person, I'm not really creating space for them to step in there. And I think this is the big challenge. Is I see coaches, just even one coach that I was speaking with this week, and we were talking about his sideline behavior. He's a really positive guy. He probably doesn't bring a lot of negativity into his sideline, his timeouts at all. But what he has started to realize is he's the most energetic person on that sideline. He's the most positive person on that sideline. He's not creating space for them to step up and to lead. And it's a challenge because you still want to be authentic. You still want to be true to yourself as a coach. And you have fun. Some coaches just really enjoy being rah-rah. And so it's just a hard balance to find as a coach of how do I be myself, but also be the version of myself that my team needs me to be.
Well, I love what you're talking about there, JP. I mean, it really reminds me of just the need for emotional intelligence for coaches on the sideline. You know, not only this awareness of what my behavior is, but probably even more importantly, how does my behavior affect my team? In other words, what does my team need from me in this moment in the game, whatever that might be? I mean, I think back to, you know, the famous shot in the NCAA tournament when Duke was down to Kentucky and they throw the long pass to Christian Laettner, you know, and he takes one dribble and throws it over his shoulder. And Kentucky had just made this dramatic shot right before that happens. And so Duke is throwing the ball inbounds with 2.5 seconds left. And there's video of the timeout with Coach K where, you know, the guys come in and, you know, immediately he's very calm. And he looks everybody in the eye, and he's very assuring. And essentially what he communicates is there's still time on the clock, and we have a plan. And he says, Grant, can you throw the ball from, you know, the baseline to the other free throw line? Yeah, coach, I can do that. Christian, can you catch the ball and get a shot off in 2 seconds? Yeah, coach, I can do that. And so all of a sudden, like, he's building their confidence because of his demeanor, because of his tone, and because – again, he's communicating, look, we have a plan to be successful here. If you can do this and you can do this. And of course, you know, they go out and he makes the shot and it becomes this historic moment, right, in the tournament. But I don't know if it happens if he unloads on his team for giving up the shot right before the timeout, or even if he does anything about what just happened and doesn't focus so confidently on what's about to happen. You know, I was in a situation like this a year ago on senior night. We were up by 4 points with about 7 seconds left. The other team comes down, they hit a three, they call timeout. So we are up by 1.5 seconds left, ball on our own baseline. And basically all we have to do is get the ball in and touch it, let the clock run, and we're going to win the game, right, by a point. And so we drop this play, and there's kind of a scramble, and we throw it in. The ball gets deflected, and some girl picks it up, and the horn goes off. And our kids, it's our third win of the year. It's on senior night. It was an upset. You know, our kids are getting really excited. And all of a sudden, this official comes flying in from the baseline, blowing his whistle. And he runs over to the scorer's table and he reports a foul. And so I thought the foul was on the other team. So I think, oh, we're going to go shoot free throws and win the game. He calls it on us. And so now with no time on the clock, they're going to shoot 1-1 free throws to win the game. We felt like we won the game. So this girl goes to the line, shaking like a leaf. You know, she makes the first one to tie it. She misses the second one. And so our kids are like in this state of disbelief, and they're deflated coming into our, you know, timeout, our 1 minute before we start overtime. And I sat our kids down and I just looked at them and I said, listen, we just beat them for 32 minutes. We can beat them for 4 more. And just in that moment, like, everything changed in our timeout, you know. And as much as I wanted to be after the officials or blame the referees or be upset about, you know, almost blowing a 4-point lead, they didn't need any of that stuff. What they needed was calm and confidence that we could win it in overtime, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and you look at some of the great coaches out there, I mean, the really, really great ones, like the Bill Belichicks. I mean, you look at their sideline demeanor when they don't have a good first quarter, or, you know, you'd mentioned Coach K or Brad Stevens in the Gonzaga, that, you know, that legendary Gonzaga-Butler game where, you know, Butler has got 4 seconds on the clock and they throw the ball in, they travel, right? So it's a turnover and there's like 3 seconds left and Gonzaga's pretty much won the game. And what happens? Brad Stevens just so calmly just starts making a few adjustments and communicating to a few guys. He doesn't have any reaction. Like, there's absolutely no reaction to that turnover. And the game should have been in the bag, right? Gonzaga should have won, but Butler goes on to make the play and win the game. And then after they win the game, he just walks over and he shakes Mark Few's hand from Gonzaga. And so I think that when it comes to what you just mentioned there, it's not even just about effect, right? It's not just about getting them to be ready to play well, but it also comes back to what we value. And I think that this is huge. If we're trying to talk about sportsmanship, if we're trying to talk about, you know, winning the game and winning the game with grace and losing the game and losing it with grace, you know, we have to be able to model that in even some really, really challenging moments. There was many times where we would be up. And I started to do this later in my coaching career. And boy, I wish I did it earlier. But we would be up late in the game and about to maybe win a really big one. And I would just call a timeout, a really quick timeout, just to remind our players that in this moment that we needed to just go in, shake hands, and then we'd go celebrate in the locker room. That just remember that they were about to experience a really challenging moment and we had been on the other side of that before. And I think that those type of opportunities will present themselves and they're incredible moments for us to teach character and to teach about sportsmanship.
I love that approach, JP, of really reflecting on what are you teaching your kids, not only in moments of triumph, but certainly in moments of frustration as well. You know, I think sometimes there's a feeling in coaching that you're justified in lashing out in anger or in yelling at your players for whatever reason, you know, if they're not, as you said before, giving their best effort, or if they're making mistakes, or if they're not being responsive, you know, sometimes we feel like that's justifiable. In fact, there was an article in our local newspaper here a couple of weeks ago about a team that wasn't playing well in the first quarter. And in the article, it said the coach went into the timeout before the start of the second quarter and just yelled at him. I mean, everybody in the gym could hear him yelling. And then they come out and they go on this 49-18 run and they blow them out. And I thought, this is such a terrible example to put in the newspaper about what great coaching actually is. Because, by highlighting that as the turning point in the game, as you said before, like, you may get the effect that you want, but what are you really teaching kids? You know, and not just about their response as players, but about life. I mean, if anger is the way that we're going to respond when things aren't going our way, or we're trying to get our players to behave in a different way, essentially we're modeling, like, when you become parents and your kids aren't behaving the way that they should, is anger the way that you're going to change that behavior? I mean, would we think about that as a teacher? If a teacher wasn't getting the behavior that they wanted from their kids, would we justify them lashing out in anger? Like, anger is not the way that we want our kids learning how to change behavior. And so I think that thinking about that from a broader perspective of what are we teaching our kids when things aren't going well can be just as important as what you mentioned there of what are we teaching them about when life is going well and how to respond to that.
Yeah, 100%, Nate. And I could go on for hours about this, but my basic principle is this: you can't be a transformational coach and use anger and fear as a motivator. Just absolutely. Like, you are not operating as a transformational coach when you use anger and fear as a motivator. And I know a lot of people, you know, get upset with this. And, you know, I've made some comments on social media and people like to argue with me about it. And, you know, well, or you're just teaching kids to be soft and they can't handle feedback. And I just come back to the fact that in sports, for some reason in sports, we have a standard that people can yell and scream at people to motivate them and to lead them, that nowhere else in the at classroom would we allow this, or even in the workplace in 2019, right? Bosses, managers do not scream and yell at their employees. If they did, it would be an HR nightmare, right? But for some reason in sports, we have this double standard. And this stuff gets me worked up, honestly, Nate. But And so this reminds me of a story of my high school coach, who I believe was a good man, but he would often fall into this trap. So there's this one game where we're playing, and he was a yeller and a screamer, right? He was very well known for pulling kids out of the game and right in front of 1,000 people just chewing you out, right up in your face. And this was accepted. Why? Because we won basketball games, and people felt at that time he was making men out of us. Right now, what people didn't really understand, only the players really understood, is as bad as that was, it was 10 times worse in the locker room. And as a player, for me, I was never able to handle it. I just couldn't take the yelling and screaming. And so people started to chirp in his ear or give him feedback on that. Probably like many of us, and like I had gotten feedback too on my coaching. And so one game he decides, all right, I'm going to try to coach different. And so he doesn't scream the entire first half. He doesn't yell the entire first half. And I'm sitting there going, something must be wrong, right? Like he's not yelling, he's not screaming. Something's up here. And I remember walking in at halftime going, like, what's going on? Why? I mean, I've been playing for this guy for 3 years, and he always is yelling, screaming the entire time. And we're not playing well. So he should be, right? And so we get in there, and he kind of paces around for a few minutes. And he's just like speechless. And finally, he just unloads on us. And he starts going off about how people told him he needs to, you know, be in control and not yell at us and get on our case. But that's just not the way he can coach. You know, this is the way he coaches, and we need to toughen up. Right? And so he was only able to hold it together for one half. But this is what I think was probably one of the biggest lessons I took from that. I remember him specifically saying, I'm not going to change. You've got to change. You've got to man up. You've got to toughen up. And I remember just like even thinking in that moment, like he's asking us to change, but he's not willing to change. And so this would be my challenge, or kind of from coaches from this story, is that not only was my coach's communication ineffective, not only was it incredibly harmful emotionally to my well-being and the well-being of other players, but he failed to capitalize on an opportunity, an amazing opportunity, to model the ability to learn and to grow, right? I understand that this is going to be a challenge for many coaches to grow in this area, to change. I've been through that process, and it's still a never-ending process, I think, for us as coaches. But he failed to capitalize on this opportunity to show us as young men the ability to be self-aware, to start to, and also just to kind of change the way that we coach, that we can better serve those that we lead.
You know, JP, after hearing that story about your head coach, I would imagine that he probably never asked you, how does it feel to be coached by me? You know, if he really understood the emotional distress and the turmoil and the negative effects that his behaviors were having on you and your team, he might have been more motivated to find a different way, or at least to reflect on, am I making us better or am I part of the problem here? But without that understanding of how your coaching is received, sometimes it's really hard to get to a place where you want to change. And I think that question of what's it like to be coached by me, or how does it feel to be coached by me, is so powerful. You know, back when I started coaching 17 years ago, I mean, I was a yeller and a screamer and a rage monster at times, because I just didn't know any better, you know. And I remember a time where we're in a locker room at halftime of a game and we're not doing something well, and I'm trying to make a point, so I slam my hand on the blackboard, on the whiteboard, and I had a piece of chalk in my hand, and it just shattered, right? And the girls thought, oh my gosh, he just broke his wedding ring, you know. And so all the great corrections and in-game adjustments that I was making, they were worried about, is my wedding ring still intact, you know? And from that point, and this was probably 10 or 12 years ago, to today, I've changed tremendously. But my change has been because of what I feel like my players need from me. And so now, over the last especially 4 or 5 years, I am very calm on the sidelines. I don't overreact to things that go well or things that go poorly. And it's not that I'm stoic and I'm not talking. I'm just trying to figure out, what does my team need in this moment? What do we need in this timeout? And you know, in getting ready for this episode, I texted a few of my former players some who have seen this transformation and some who have kind of seen me in a more calm way over the last few years. And I just asked them, you know, what effect did I have on you guys, you know, during games on the sideline? And one of my players texted me back and she said this. She said, You were always very calm and positive, even in hectic situations on the floor, which personally made me remain calm and gave me confidence. We were confident because we could see the confidence you had in us just by the way you handled yourself. And I think that's one of the best compliments that I've ever received from a player that goes back to, I feel like I was benefiting them in the way that I was handling myself on the sideline.
Yeah, it's funny because, Nate, I was actually at lunch with one of my former players this week up in Canada where he's playing college basketball. And I thought about asking him the question, but I just went ahead and just apologized. I just said, I just want to let you know I'm sorry for those moments that I was a crazy sideline coach. And it was we had a good conversation about it. But here's what I would say to coaches is that when you make this change, you will feel so much better about yourself as a coach. Like you'll feel so much more connected. And I guess that's one of my biggest encouragements there is when I started to change that, like yelling and screaming, I didn't feel good about myself as a coach. And I remember constantly going, I hate that I have to yell at you guys. I remember saying those type of things. Well, the reality is I don't. Right? There's a different way to do it. And so hopefully we've made a good argument today for us to be a little bit more self-aware and to start to make the change. I just would share these two things that I did after I became self-aware, after I'd asked my players, you know, about the way that I was communicating on the sideline. But two things that made a huge difference for me. One was just to actually empower a few of the players and a few of my assistants, not just to be a hold me back type of, you know, moment, right, when I get rage on the referee, but to really in those moments to just letting me know, like, the way you're communicating right now, that's not helpful. And so I asked them, I encouraged them, I empowered them. I said, in these moments, when you start to see me fall back into old habits, I want you to step in and let me know, right? And bring me back, right? Bring me back from I don't know what you call it, from the darkness or whatever. Bring me back from the rage, right? The other thing I did that was really, really impactful, and I didn't do this for an entire year, but I probably did it for about 15 games, was I carried a note card. And every time I would say something on that note card, I'd have a pen and I had to either qualify it as positive, negative, or informative, right? So I was either communicating something that was just some positive encouragement, I was being negative and I was giving, you know, getting on people, or I was just providing information for people. And by just doing that, it was real in the moment. And I ended up becoming so much more intentional about what I said. And I wasn't just saying things to say things like so often I did as a coach. And those two things really, really, really helped me as a coach. And really, within just the course of a year, I was able to really flip the switch as far as being this very, very transactional, crazy sideline guy to be much, much more connected and calm and stoic and hopefully a little bit more like you, Nate.
What I think is so cool about your story, JP, and the experience that I've had kind of in just changing my sideline demeanor is that we found a way to break off from the stereotype of what, quote unquote, you know, good coaching looks like. You know, there's this typecast that coaches have to be constantly yelling and correcting and jumping up and down and being in their players' face to be effective. And quite honestly, you can do it another way and you can benefit your team. And I don't think there's any question, at least in my own experience, that our players were far better and are far better today in responding to the way that I coach now by putting their needs first and what they need in those moments than what I was like 10 years ago when I was just responding to my own sort of emotional turmoil. So my encouragement to coaches would be that it can be done differently and to find role models and to explore and reflect and ask your players, what do they really need so that you can best serve your teams?
All right, that's it for today's episode. Nate and I are going to be continuing our conversation with Mark Bennett next week on the Coaching Culture Podcast. And it's going to actually build really well off of this episode today, because if you're not going crazy in the sideline, how can you still communicate better? Well, Mark is going to go into some very practical ways on which we can empower our players for them to step up, for them to be coaches on the court or on the field, for them to be more encouraging and hold each other accountable so that we don't feel like we have to resort back to those old coaching behaviors. So be sure to tune into the podcast next week. Thank you for listening in.